You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Robert Karma Robinson. Rob is a fantastic actor. We went to the same undergrad where we got to do Othello together, which is still one of my favorite productions I've been a part of. He is an amazing performer and a joy to collaborate with, and it really made my week to sit down and talk about life and art with an old friend. I hope you enjoy the 56th episode of The Compass. The question that I always start the podcast with is, what do you do to try to go from... I'm not going to fuck up. What do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist? And what is the dark side for you? Because it's different for everybody.
I think the dark side for me, and I think the dark side, I don't want to speak for all actors, but I think the dark side for most actors is when you find yourself without work for a certain amount of time, the tendency is to think that it's because of something, some fault in you. You're not good enough. You start to compare yourself to your friends who are, you know, further along in their careers, and it can be a spiral.
Yeah.
So I think for me, what I found the easiest way to remedy that is to surround myself with like-minded artists. Like, for instance, like Amios, or Shots, the guys who produce Shots.
Yeah.
Just being able to, even if you're not participating, just go and watch and be in the same sort of collective. It tends to shake you right out of that, because then it inspires you in a way that, like, I mean, I think just creating stuff. The minute that the darkness starts to seep in, you have to find an outlet to create. Maybe not acting wise, paint. I just create. I guess that's the long and short of it. I create, or try to find outlets that help me, inspire me to create, or
like go to a show or.
Help someone build a show. Especially for me, whenever I go on like Equity and I'm looking for, you know, auditions, the market for my particular skill set is very thin.
Mm-hmm.
And seems like it's thinner for every day. You know, there's not a whole lot of work for a 6'3" Black guy who has an amazing grasp of multiple language, high, middle, low, and so I try to stay creative.
I didn't know you paint.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
When I lived here in the city, growing up in New York, before I found acting, before I found that I thought I was going to work for Marvel. So I was a kid who used to win all the local, you know, city art contests.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go draw Spider-Man 50,000.
Yeah.
When the rentals saw that I had a penchant for that, they threw all the money they could at it. They bought me the paints, the easels, the pastels, it's been a long time since I've actually done any like large pieces of work. growing up in the city in the 80s was you were surrounded by so much of this amazing art. Like, you could go into the train stations and the trains were art pieces, because graffiti was so huge back then, but I left the city before I could like get fully immersed into the graffiti part of New York at the time.
Yeah, how old were you when you went to Texas?
I was 11 and a half.
Okay.
11 and a half.
Yeah, that's still pretty young to
Yeah, I was riding the trains, you know, by myself for a long time, but I learned to drive in Texas. You know, when you learn to drive some. You kind of know it better than I found myself, I always might have a career in the arts. I just didn't know what particular kind. But yeah, I paint, I draw. I wish I'd brought my bag with me. I usually have a sketch pad with me everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Just because you never know when, you know, that inspiration, that need to create is going to hit you. So I generally just carry it with me.
Do you write as well? I'm just curious.
I have before. And I, yes, I do write, but it's in great spurts. Like there'll be an impetus for me to write, and I'll write a whole bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the kind of writing that I do, I think I write music. I hear music when I write. So in my book of writing, like the stuff that I read for
Empower Hour. That's right.
That came right out of an old journal.
Right.
Because when I write, I think I write music. But in talking to Lori after that, she's like, no, I think you write poetry. I think what you write is poetry. And she may be right about that. I just have never had anyone tell me what it is that I write. So I'm always looking for other people's opinions on it. And I've actually posted a few. If you look on the notes section of my Facebook page, there was a time I was giving my writing to my social family for their input, because I really wanted to know what they felt what I was writing. And I got a few responses, but it was never enough for it to really hook me into writing all the time.
Right. Well, Facebook is weird like that sometimes.
You just miss so much.
Well, some things you post and for whatever algorithm, lots of people see it, and then something you post and someone's like, oh, I had no idea you did that. And you're like, oh, yeah.
So I think that's probably a lot of the reason why it didn't work. But yeah, I do write.
Yeah.
Not often.
That's what, I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast before. I wish that I were a playwright, and I'm not. But mostly, the writing I've done takes more the form of, journaling, or journaling as poetry kind of thing, that's much more personal.
Yeah, same.
But I know you're close with a lot of playwrights. I'm sure you could, if you gave them a little envelope, I'm sure you'd get some feedback. If you really wanted to.
I never really thought about that. It's that, Larry Dial is actually it's a perfect example of this is an amazing thing. When Larry was a senior and I was a junior.
This Larry is a playwright who went to college with us. Yeah.
This is before he was a writer. I asked him to write for me. I said, yo, you should write a play for me. And I was half joking, but I was half serious. And I didn't think anything of it. But then, before he graduated, he handed me the script and at the time it was called Beef. And we had two characters in it. And when I became a senior, for our senior projects, I tried to get Nick Mills to do it with me.
Mm-hmm.
Nick opted out. He had his own project he wanted to do, which was fine. So basically, I held on to this script for forever. I held on to it till I got to New York, where Larry had decided he was going to be a writer. Because of I asked him to write this play for me, he and then in turn, I don't know, I guess it turned on the faucet for him, and then he just started.
Yeah.
So now, cut to 2016, he's written and produced several of his own plays, a bunch of them I've been in. So it's kind of that weird synergistic thing where you say do something and then here it is later on in life, he's done it and really, he's really good.
Well, that's I wanted to ask you about that, because you guys have such a great collaborative relationship in addition to your friendship. Mm-hmm. And you just did another one of his plays, In the Room, which was wonderful. Do you find that you have a lot of those artistic relationships that kind of, it's not just a one project?
Keep coming back.
You
around.
Keep collaborating?
Actually, yeah. For the last few years, I've been a professional for 10 years now. And in those 10 years, I've been lucky enough to create or originate roles in two shows that just keep coming back around. One of them is called Fly, and they were written by Ricardo Kahn and Trey Ellis. And Fly is about the Tuskegee Airmen, and I've done that maybe four times. And,
oh my gosh.
And then the other one that I originated the role in was the baseball show that I did. And now I've done that one maybe four or five times now, too.
It was Kansas City.
Kansas City Swing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you first meet them, just through getting the job through an audition, or?
Oddly enough, no. The first job I ever had was at a small playhouse on Martha's Vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Ricardo through the artistic director out there. He was a director in residency there, and guess he must have saw me do some sort of when you ask him about it, he says that he remembers me doing something acrobatic. Candy, I was like, acrobatic? Well, what could I possibly do? He's like, I don't even remember, but you were doing something acrobatic and I saw you. And I was like, and then so through this chance meeting on the vineyard, I've gotten the majority of the work that I've done in the last 10 years has been from that single relationship.
That's amazing.
I actually just talked to him yesterday. Because he was the curator of the newly opened African American wing of the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm. In DC.
In DC. Yeah. That was his thing.
Oh my gosh.
Like, they came to him and said, here's $2 million and do this thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is theater not his only thing then?
Rick is actually one of the founding members of Crossroads Theater in mm-hmm. New Jersey. And they won a Tony, I don't know, early 2000s, I think, or late 90s. But, it's a regional, we won a Tony regionally. But since then, he sort of handed over the reins of the company to other people and has now been sort of just writing. He's actually on the board at UMKC. So every couple of years, he'll go out there and start a new writing project with whatever class is there. And that's how Fly got started, and that's how Kansas City Swing got started. It all came out of him being like writing for this school.
Uh-huh.
Turning the plays. And actually, Fly was actually, what's the word?
Commissioned,
thank you, by Lincoln Center.
Oh, okay.
And it was a 45-minute, play that they were taking around to all of the local schools. Because it
seems like both of these plays are historically based.
I mean, when it comes to African-American historical figures, that's my wheelhouse.
Yeah, that's what you built your house on. We gotta pick the next one for him to write the next play. I know. You gotta do that Mountaintop by Katori Hall.
All right,
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's been.
That's really special.
It's been a great relationship because, it's rare that you can pick up the phone and call a director writer of his caliber, and he'll call you back.
Yeah.
He'll call me back and talk to me. I knew who, when he was dating his now wife, I was, really into their, relationship when they were meeting. I was like, she's great, dude.
Give him the pep talk.
And he's just...
I was going to ask you about mentors. Is that someone, would you consider that relationship kind of in that vein?
Absolutely. Very much so. It gives me sort of a hope for the future that here's a successful African-American man in the theater, in mm-hmm. the business of creating work, in the business of uplifting art in this way, and he didn't have to sacrifice his integrity or his own artistic creations to anybody's level of that. He found a way to be successful by his own terms, on his own terms, and I feel like for cats like me who sort of aren't the norm, mm-hmm. it inspires me because, I'm especially stoked that so many of our friends are doing this thing so well because it's only a matter of time before we take over. We're the mob.
Get the Evansville Mafia for sure.
Right. They don't know us yet, but they will be.
Well, that's, that's an interesting thing. And like you were saying before with the dark side, like comparing yourself to other people when you're not working. And it's, it's a really inspiring thing in some ways that we are peers with such people through our various training and everything and our friendships, some of which have gotten very lucky and are really doing this at the quote unquote, top level or whatever. They're making the money and they're on the big shows or whatever. Great. But everyone I know is doing amazing things, is making things, like you were saying, like just in your daily life, whether you're making a big project or not, you're painting, you're creating something. And so how do you define success for yourself in a way that, like, you can celebrate when you get a big break and when one of your friends gets a big break, but that can't be the only thing that you call success, because otherwise that only happens once every 20 years, you know?
Right.
So I don't know if that's a very specific question, but...
Well, I think I get what you're saying. I try not to measure success by any sort of standard barometer. I feel like as long as my will to do this life is still the strongest, I feel like the decision to be an artist, to be this kind of artist, to live this kind of life is something that a lot of people sort of kind of, it wanes for them over the years. That's why they stop doing it, or they...
Well, and it's hard. Things. Like, the day-to-day life is hard. You know, that can get in the way.
I think the measure of success for me is the fact that it doesn't wane, or it hasn't waned.
That your desire is still there.
Or is like, this is the mission.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I describe it to a lot of people.
I like that.
I tell people, like, I'm Batman in this. The life killed my parents. Not let that happen to anybody else, but to really strive to be that kind of artist that inspires others. Even though I don't want to be a teacher. At least, you know, if someone sees a role, sees me do something, or in the way that I live my life, to be like, you know what, that dude, yeah, I'm gonna do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's enough of a measure of success for me.
Yeah,
because I think inevitably the monetary, all that extra stuff being issued into the other echelons of success, I think those are inevitable if your desire is strong and if your will for this is strong enough. So it'll come. Far too often, I feel like a lot of us think it's a sprint rather than the marathon that
mm-hmm.
it is. And I got strong legs. I'll be there.
We're still here. It's been a minute. We're still here. Can we talk a little bit about, like, day jobs and, like, how you've pieced together over the past 10 years?
Absolutely,
like,
absolutely.
Living the life and paying the bills?
Most of it has been freelance work. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky enough that it's been freelance work in the same sort of vein, in maybe not theatrically, but I'm a stagehand for a few different companies. Brick Media is one of them. They're the guys who are responsible for Celebrating Brooklyn. They
mm-hmm.
have concerts and stuff to the park every summer, and have for the last 30 years.
Yeah, they do a lot of cool stuff there.
Yeah, and they just most... I now work for them at their sort of not-for-profit building. They have a building like downtown Brooklyn, right around the corner from BAM. And it's sort of like a multifaceted space. They do a lot of things in there. They have public access classes. They do a lot of... they do a lot of shows there, and a lot of them are either free or they have tickets that are subsidized, so you can see a lot of really great art through this place, Brick House. I actually got the job through another UWE guy, Derek Wright.
Oh yeah.
he brought me in I want to say like 5 or 6 years back to work a summer in the park.
He was doing lighting for them?
Yeah,
nice.
One of the guys over there. And then he brought me in to do Celebrate Brooklyn one summer, and from that they called me back. And then when they opened this new space a few years ago, I think 3 years ago, they opened this Brick House down there. They called me and said, "Hey, we would like you to come over and help us, be one of the." And I've been with them ever since.
So wait, what do you do at the building itself? Like when they have performances there,
you got it. I basically set up and take down.
Awesome.
Staging, hang lights, all that stuff, that theater practice, come like Chuck
yeah.
Meacham, shut up. Chuck Meacham, I'm doing you proud, homie.
That's true.
So it's still in the field. Like, I've seen some amazing art.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing that you get to see all these concerts and shows.
I just did Ron Brown. He's a choreographer, and his company does, or has, I'd say they're sort of like the Brooklyn Alvin Ailey, if you will. they were just in residency about 2 weeks ago, and I worked for that work their shows last year too, and so there was already an established relationship with that. So
nice.
So things like that. That's how I've sort of been able to keep the lights on. And the fact is, I'm from here, and my family's had a brownstone in Brooklyn for the last since the 1920s. So that affords me a lot more leeway than, say, some of my friends in the city who have to struggle every day just to make rent.
Right.
I don't really pay rent. I don't pay New York rent.
Right. Well, I was also going to ask about your family and how they, you said that they were very supportive when you were young and like starting to paint and stuff, but how they take in your choice to be an artist. And then also, how is it to live with your dad? Great for the rent, but how is that for you as a guy?
All right, I'm going to try to...
Several questions.
I think they still support it. Although the Robinsons as a family, we tend to be really independent.
Mm.
So for the most part, I guess right about the time my parents separated and our family was kind of doing this dual thing, I think we all had to find a way within ourselves to do what we needed to do without the help of other people. And for the most part, that's kind of what it is. I mean, they're always really glad when I'm just, I think my mom's my biggest fan. That's always going to be the thing. She calls me Little Denzel. It's Little
Denzel. And she's still in Texas?
Yeah, she's still in Texas.
Yeah.
The old man was when my parents met, the old man was a budding calypso singer.
Oh.
Yeah. So
okay.
He was an artist himself. So I think just the fact that he was an artist himself, he kind of understands what the life is.
A little bit. Need.
So he's really kind of like, he's there, but he's not like, you know, some like he's not like Beyonce's mom. if they were, I think I'd be probably further along, but no, I've sort of been left to my own devices to create a life for myself that they support, but not like tactilely, not like hands-on.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that, living with the old man, has been an interesting view into my parents' relationship, because the I mean, for all intents and purposes, I probably shouldn't be here, because they are such disparate people. They're just so different. I don't understand how. Well, I guess the opposites do attract, because they're really disparate. But living with them has been fine. It's been great.
Is it separated into apartments? Like, do you have your own your own space?
Basement. It's a 3-story brownstone. I guess 4 if you include the basement. So he has a whole basement apartment to himself. And my little sister lives in the building too.
Oh.
Yeah. She just moved to New York 2 years ago.
I was going to say, I don't know if I've met your little sister.
I don't think anyone has.
What does she do?
She's an accountant. I don't know.
Good
if
for her.
Accounting, but
good for her.
What, she's an MBA. That's what
she's okay.
in. She's really smart, and she's sort of like a super, super extreme version of me. Like, if I had stayed a little more jaded and cynical. Like, that's what it was. So
you're all living so close to each other, but you're each doing your own thing. Yeah.
I never see them. I mean, unless interesting. I really look for them.
Right.
I could go months without seeing my family.
Right.
Which is just so weird.
Weird. I mean, you know, nice that they're not up in your business all the time, but maybe a little extreme.
Because I know so many of my friends, they're really close to their families. And they go, you know, Thanksgivings and things like that. Robinsons don't do Thanksgivings. We don't do Christmases anymore either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just actually went and asked the old man today. I was like, hey, are you going to Texas this year? Because normally you go to Texas, you know, for Christmas, you know, visit the old lady. And he's like, nah, I don't think so. And I was like, well, why is that? And because he's been laid off a bunch this year. And he's just like, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, Thanksgiving. I did Thanksgiving with the Dials for the last 4 years. We're just not big on the whole togetherness family thing.
Right.
And we love each other, but
No, I mean that's just interesting to me, not being from New York.
Well, this mic doesn't pick up my grumbling.
Oh, that's okay. Do we need a snack break?
No, I just
or if you want to get more water, feel free. No, well, I feel like so many of us who are not from here have like a chosen family. But our actual families are just farther away, so it's kind of separation is a little clearer. And you've done kind of the same thing, but it's just interesting that your family's just right next door.
I can hear them sometimes. Like if I'm in the bathroom upstairs, I can hear my little sister laughing in her room. I'm like, oh, I guess bad girl's home.
You've done so much work regionally. I wanted to ask you about working out of town and like. Mm-hmm. If you have certain rituals now that help you get through that, or if you really enjoy it, or if it's hard to be away from your home.
I need it. I love it.
Yeah.
Especially if New York is going to be your base of operations. This isn't an easy town to live in as an artist, especially for a lot of the things that we previously talked about. Especially because New York is a town that makes people, it changes people. It makes them more guarded, it makes them more jaded, it makes them, I don't want to say less human, but they're less inclined to be nice to humanity. I feel like, for me, I've been lucky enough in the last few years to work so much regionally, you know, probably like 6 months out of New York, a year, which is great. I think you need to get out of this town, because it gives you a perspective on what's really important. And what you should strive to be as a person. I feel like I'm a better human being when I'm not in New York, because I'm more. I like people. I like to talk to people. I want to be able to, you know, wake up and go out the door and like have a conversation with a stranger on the street. Mm-hmm. You try to do that here, people feel like there's an ulterior motive. Or
I know I'm addicted to my headphones now.
You know,
like, I won't go around the corner to the grocery store without my headphones.
Self-check yourself, like, you know, what's going on with me, and the blinders sort of shut the world out in a way that allow you to self-evaluate. But when you're self-evaluating every day, consistently, 365, then you're not, as an artist, you're not looking out for what's going on in the world, and we're supposed mm-hmm. to be a reflection of that.
Yeah.
We're supposed to reflect what's going on around us, and you can't do that if your eyes are covered, and your ears are covered, and your soul is covered. So I love it. I was the first time I went out was a tour with Montana Repertory, and I was on the road for about a year and a half.
Oh my gosh!
And I loved it. I mean, having a new city, a new bed, a new sky every other day was awesome. It was awesome. New people. Like I've played a lot of theaters, a lot of really small, like you wouldn't even have known these theaters existed, but you go inside of them and the history in them, it is something that feeds you as an artist. You know, you play a space where so many others have come before you, but it's like a little secret, it's like a little hole in one of these things. So it's like you've been elected to a whole other echelon of. Almost like a secret society in a way. I don't know how to describe it. But I love being on the road. I do. It's odd that I haven't really broken New York yet, and I live here 10 years in and I've never been on Broadway. And that used to bother me early on, because Broadway was always the dream. But
mm-hmm.
when I got back to New York and I was seeing what Broadway was about, you know, it stopped appealing to me in that way. You know, once upon a time Broadway used to be like a vehicle for like the great American artists, you know, the Steinbecks and the Williams, you know, the Odettes, and these guys were reflecting their times in a way that inspired people. And now you can't spit on Broadway without hitting something that Disney has a hand in or whatever. And like even the stuff that they're touting is like, oh, new and edgy. I mean, other than like, honestly, I feel like other than Lin-Manuel Miranda, I feel like nothing on Broadway has been like that thing that has, you know, gripped me so hard. A few years ago, they were at Fun Home. They were touting that as being like, oh, wow, this is so new and so progressive. And I went and saw it, and I was like, this is just like everything else we've seen in the theater, except that the subject matter is about a lesbian and not about some white dude. It became sort of a...
Yeah, there's small, like, small bright spots here and there, but yeah. the vast majority... It's like movies. It's like movies too, because it's like, oh, we're gonna do the 12th spinoff of this one thing that worked. Yeah, instead of creating something new.
And I find that that's part of the reason why LA. When I decided that acting was gonna be the thing I do, the dream was always I wanted to do movies. I wanted to do film and TV. And I always had planned to make. I was planning to be in LA. And then when it came time to make the decision to go to New York or LA. It's in the same way I looked at LA and what they were doing and how they were doing, and I was like, I'm not going to be happy doing that. Like, at least not now.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been lucky that I found like-minded artists to write for me. Like, I wouldn't have gotten Satchel Paige if I hadn't worked with Rick on Fly, and he saw something in me that he was like, I want to write for this kid. And in the same way that Larry was like, I want to write for me, and then he did, and then he has kept writing. And I feel like when you build relationships like that, you're gonna be successful. There's no reason there's not to. When you have a collaboration with like-minded people and you build something that is, you know, honest and I think it's inevitable. So I love regional theater.
Well, and you can also get paid more sometimes, because like there are more interesting plays going on off Broadway, but I mean they just won the Fairway Jump Stage, and that's going to take years to be implemented, and like you can't survive.
You can't eat. And that's, I feel like that's a detriment to a lot of my peers who, like I said, don't have the same situation that I have, because I can take some of those gigs,
yeah,
you know, because you know I don't need to make rent, but. For a lot of my friends, it's just not in the cards for them in that way. Even if it is something that speaks to them artistically and they would love to do it, like, they can't do it for $250 a week.
No. Tell me about In the Room, Larry's latest play.
Great show.
What did you learn doing this? I know you're working with a lot of people you've worked with before. Mm-hmm. So this play that Larry wrote was kind of all about, like, writers' workshops. Mm-hmm. It all took place like in a room with a bunch of writers doing different classes and workshops, which to me was very familiar being from the theater. I wonder what people who aren't in the theater would take from it.
I think it speaks to not just like what goes on in the room, but it speaks to something that is inherently human about all of us, this desire to connect or reconnect or... So in one of the last days of performance, we had this local little joint that we would go to after performances.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of, I guess, the month that we had been running, we've been going there a few times. And I just so happened, I struck up a conversation in the last week with one of the bouncers. And the bouncer, it turned out, it's huge, probably like 350 pounds, looks like a bouncer. So I was sitting outside, I was smoking a cigarette, and we struck up a conversation, and it turns out he used to be a chef. He used to have his own restaurant until 9/11 happened, and then the bottom fell out, and so now he was a bouncer at night, but during the day he worked as like a corrections officer in like a juvie, like where they hold, you know, juvenile offenders. And I was like, yo, hey man, well I'm doing the show up the street there, make sure you come check it out. And he did.
He came?
He came. The last show he came, and like, you like...
That's awesome.
Loved it. Like, had me sign program and take it back. I had all the other actors sign it. He was like, yo, man, I'm glad I came to see this. And he wasn't a writer. But
right.
I think in that way, like, he was a creator for a time. I think when you speak to creation, anytime you're going to speak to creation, I think that is something that all human beings can understand.
Well, and what I also loved about the story was, like, a lot of the characters are, you're kind of rehashing your own history. even if they're writing something that isn't necessarily quote unquote related, like, I think that's fascinating for all human beings, whether they're aware they're doing it, like we are, because we're artists, or not, like trying to construct some sort of narrative that makes sense as to what's happened to you in your life, or like where you came from, or your parents, or like your ancestors. Art.
We need it more. We need it now more than ever. I feel like we're on the verge of a renaissance, an artistic renaissance. There's going to be a lot of great art to come out of the next few years, and I don't know why. It's just something that I feel like is on the horizon. Because I feel like so many people, what is happening in the world and what is happening in the world is stirring so many people's artistic juices in a way that there's going to be some great stuff to come. I don't know when, I don't know why.
And it's so scary, but hopefully that can be one bright thing, so that people try to do something. Is there something from the last few years that you're really proud of that you want to tell me about? Like a lesson you've learned, or it doesn't have to be like a huge event.
I feel like that is one of the things that are going to hit me when I'm on the train. I could probably say something.
You can think about it.
I feel like, you know what I think it is? I think it is the ability to not let my surroundings affect, or not just my surroundings, but like my station, surrounding the station, affect the joy and the love and the ability to be light, to have light. Like I was talking about how New York is one of those places that it tends to fold light on itself. It tends to crush light. Like you can, I've seen some of the shiniest people, like full of like all the love and the hope and the art, and they show up here and this town destroys them, and they leave. They get out. And I think for me, especially over the last few years, because I've had this time to be away from New York, this time to sort of understand what's important for me and realize how I want to be as a human being. I feel like that in and of itself, being able to come back here and still maintain that light within myself in the day to day. Like I'm actively practicing going everywhere with a smile. Even if I'm not, even if I don't feel that, just putting it on your face and making your way through that. Even when it's not reciprocated to you, being able to be like, it's okay. You know, that just having the able to just smile and show that light outside of all this dark, like that is that for me has been a great boon, relief.
I like that. Do you think you would ever move out of New York?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. But New York's always home. I mean, at least for the Robinsons. But I don't know if New York is for me forever. It's definitely not a forever place for me. It's where the Batcave is. it's where the Operation Center, Command Center is. But no, I don't think I'll be forever in New York. I mean, I haven't seen enough of the world yet. There's far too much of this planet that I need to experience before they kick me off of it. Get off the planet.
Yeah.
For sure.
If you are having a day where you're feeling like you're just uninspired and depressed or whatever, are there any concrete things that you reach for again and again, like a book that you reread or music you listen to
or whiskey,
a place you go with your whiskey?
I watch a lot of like movies and television, mm-hmm. and when I'm not feeling something, if I'm not feeling it in a day, I think for me, being able to just turn on something, like I'll rewatch a movie that I love that'll light that fire again. For Coming to America, for instance, there's something about the performances in that movie for me, because it's a time and place. I remember seeing it in the theater with the old man. would, you know, go on a train and sing it at 42nd Street, you know, with the old man. And so, like, so things like that, just being able to remember a time when it wasn't so dire.
Yeah.
Because it, sometimes it just feels like it's just not that serious. Whatever's going on, it in the moment, it seems like the most dire thing, and if you let it fester, if you sit in it, then it becomes a problem. And I try not to do that anymore.
Right. Find something light.
Find some light. Find some light.
Yeah.
Yes, that's it. Find some light.
And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently that you want to recommend? Of any art form.
Well, I'm always going to recommend Sleep No More, because I used to work there. And Tim Heck.
That's right.
I think he's now.
He's there now?
I think he's the one.
Oh.
I think he's the Macbeth character now.
Nice.
He's like the main track in that show now. And a lot of what Amios is doing, you know, they've been around for about, I want to say 5 years now, and they produce a new work every month, or have for consistently for the last, you know, a few years.
This company does, the first Monday of every month, they put up a bunch of short plays that people have had just like 3 weeks to work on and put up.
Night.
Yeah,
night.
There you go.
So many like-minded individuals together, like the birth of things outside of that can happen. Like you can meet a playwright or a director or an actor in the course of rehearsing for shots, and then you can then hear another relationship that can inspire you to do something else.
And it just helps you have something to work on if you have a month where you're...
And that's one of the things I tell people, like even if it's you know, this little kitschy thing that you're doing, you know, whatever, you're still practicing. You're still working on stuff. You're still in the room with people. You're still creating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, not all creation is great, but not all of it has to be. Just create and let the chips lie where they may. It may be shit, but it may not.
That's okay. You're allowed to swear.
Oh, okay. I've been doing.
You would have been swearing this whole time.
I've been trying to be very conscious about it now.
You're fine.
So, anything that Amios is doing, and they have a multiple pokers in the fire. They're not just doing like this. They're not just doing shots, but they're taking shots pieces and then developing them into full length plays with their new first drafts. Is I think what they call it. That Sleep No More. I'm trying to think, what have I seen recently?
Well, we'll end it on that. That's a good note, though. Just keep creating. Sounds good. Thank you, Rob. Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller. Music by Brendan Spieth. Audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.